Dallas and Axel are looking for somewhere to hang out. The Bullet Club is for everyone.
That would be Balor Club.
That's what I said. I got a speech impediment.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client.
Mama Monster.
Conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Fat delete.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 544 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, April 22nd, 2018. I am the Solid Monster, back from my first visit to Charleston, South Carolina this week. I was there on business. What a beautiful city. A beautiful city that Charleston is. I only had one night there, so I didn't have a chance to really explore the city, but apparently businesses are moving in there at a crazy rate. Boeing has this huge factory there, and Volvo, Mercedes vans. They're building like crazy in Charleston, and some good food there too, so It was good to get to the Carolinas. I don't know if Charleston would be considered flair country unless you count all of the Carolinas as flair country, which I don't think you would, but I can't wait to go back. Audible. Got to talk about an Audible spotlight this week. One of the cool things I wanted to start doing here, because I get some suggestions from you guys very often emailing me saying, hey, you know, you might want to talk about this book. This book's available on Audible, or maybe you're interested in reading this book. So we had Vince. One of our listeners, Vince in Kuwait, brought this to my attention this week after my review of the Andre the Giant HBO documentary, and he thought other people would be interested, and I was interested in it. I thought this was kind of cool. There's a book on Audible that you can get free with our trial link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You can use that to start your 30-day trial of the service. You guys know that already. And as part of that trial, you get one free book. And the cool thing is that even if you cancel the trial not to be billed before the 30 days are up, you get to keep the book. Well, there's a book called As You Wish, Inconceivable Tales from the Making of the Princess Bride, which is one of the all-time great movies. Of course, Andre the Giant played Fezzik in that movie. You can buy it if you'd like to. It's about $21, but why would you do that when you can get it for free with our trial? The book is narrated by the stars from the film itself, so Cary Elwes, Christopher Guest, Carol Kane, Norman Lear, Wallace Shawn, Robin Wright, Billy Crystal, and even the director, Rob Reiner. Andre the Giant is missing, obviously, and frankly, the idea of Andre narrating anything, let alone an audiobook, is pretty damn funny to me. But you can get the book for free. Just use our link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. It's not enough just to punch it in. You got to sign up for the trial, but you got 30 days to try it out. And the book is As You Wish. And if you do check that book out, let me know what you think. Thank you also to everybody who made a PayPal donation this week. I am forever indebted to everybody who has supported the show in this way. TheSolomonster.com is always the place to go. You'll see the PayPal button waving at you on the right-hand side of the page. You can click it, you can touch it, you can caress it, you can do whatever you want to it. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. Thank you to Chuck Lunatic Lentz. I love Chuck. Chuck's been a longtime supporter, as has John Loose Cannon Lopez. You didn't think I was going to forget about him, did you? Deadpool James Herrera. Out of Control Cody Thomas. Luis Hercules Hernandez. Beast Mode Brock Joseph. Mass Grave Micah Harshaw. Raymond the Mountie Medina. Aim for the Head. Andrew Jorlog, The Maniac Medic, W.S. Fletcher, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Kind of a Big Deal, Corey Blake, The Show Off, Corey Van Dam, The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, The Malaysian Mastermind, Samuel T, The Griller, Ray Grit, The Dirty Birdie, Gabriel Sanchez, The Renton Road Warrior, Taylor Schatt, Grimlock, Garrick Booker, The Dogs, Bollocks, Sean McLaughlin. You guys come up with some pretty crazy names, I have to say. Interfere and I'll Kill You, Inga Wabo, Gabriel the San Diego Beer Snob Solis, who has not one but two shout-outs this week that he requested. One for the bet that he lost to Gerald Jones in our Facebook group. I have no idea what this bet was about. I don't know if I want to know. And the other for his grandmother, Natty Carbajal, who passed away this week. She was a fighter until the end. So I'm very sorry to hear that, Gabriel. And last but not least here, Jeffrey Too Sweet Taddeo. And that comes from his awesome wife, Jessie. And she did not tell me to say that. She did not tell me to say that, but I'm saying it anyway. She is awesome. And thank you to Jeffrey for being a fan. So thank you to everybody for that. Always appreciate the support. My thanks also to Wade Keller of the Pro Wrestling Torch for having me back on his podcast this week to talk about SmackDown Live. Been on there now about half a dozen times, and always a pleasure to be on there with him. And the show is available for download. I think he's got it up on Blog Talk Radio. If you search for it, I'm sure you could find it if you want to go back and download and give that a listen. So we start out here, and there's a lot to talk about, obviously not the least of which includes the Superstar Shakeup. We're going to go through all those moves, move by move. We'll talk about that. I have predictions for the so-called Greatest Royal Rumble coming up this Friday in Saudi Arabia. This thing has become a full-blown pay-per-view. This is a WrestleMania-esque show. I'm going to talk about why in a little bit, and I don't know that everybody is going to be happy when I tell you why. But unfortunately, we have some sad news to start out with, and that is the death of WWE Hall of Famer, one of the biggest, really, legends in the entire industry all time, Bruno Sammartino, who passed away on Wednesday morning, 82 years old. And look, you know, 82 is a good age to live to. I mean, that's a full life right there, although I got to tell you, when I heard the news, I was stunned. I was really stunned because, you know, even though he was an older man, Bruno seemed to, I'm sure he had his health issues, as everybody does as you get older, but Bruno was still working out. He was still keeping himself in incredible shape. You know, the mind was there. He was still making appearances. And so, considering the shape that he was still in, I was very surprised to hear that he had passed away. His mind, like I said, still sharp as a tack. He's one of the few people I could listen to tell stories all day long. And I heard a lot of those same stories that Bruno would tell in all the different interviews that he did about his upbringing as a child and his family, you know, running from the Nazis and how he was sick with rheumatic fever. I heard that story so many times, but it never got old. Because first of all, it's an incredible story when you really go back and hear about what he went through as a kid, what his mother went through. I believe she was shot. And his family coming over to this country and you know, trying to live out the American dream. It's an incredible story worthy of a feature film. And I know that there's been talk about doing a movie about Bruno's life. I think he was approached. He might have even had a hand in it. There might be something that's sort of in the works right now. But these things just take forever. And so now, unfortunately, if something does come out, he won't be around to see it. But his life story from start to finish is absolutely worthy of a feature film, not just a documentary, but an actual feature film. And his impact on the business, his impact on WWE, going back to the early days, the WWWF days, and what he meant to that company. You know, you look at people like Hulk Hogan, and you look at people like Stone Cold Steve Austin, and I guess in this era, you would look at somebody like John Cena, and what they meant to business, and what they meant to the company. And Bruno really was, I think, the first to sort of, you know, be in that role, be in that sort of position in this company where everything was sort of built around him. And if anything happened to him, if they didn't have Bruno, they would have been in trouble. I mean, they really would have been in rough shape. Now, Bruno held the world title for 8 straight years when he won that championship. 8 years. He was the champion for, and he only lost it because he was burned out. He wanted to lose it. He was ready to drop it. They didn't want him to, but he was burned out. He didn't want it anymore. And then he had a second title reign. Again, I think he had to be convinced to come back, and he held the championship for a second time, and that lasted another 4 years after they got him to come back. So all told, that is 12 years as world champion. It's pretty impressive stuff. Pretty impressive stuff. You know, you hear about somebody like Fabulous Moolah, who is the women's champion for something like 26 or 27 years. And yeah, that's impressive, but when you hear the stories about the kind of stranglehold that Moolah had on you know, women's wrestling and, you know, basically making herself champion, it's kind of like when you hear about all the titles Jerry Lawler won in Memphis, And Jerry Lawler was a huge star in Memphis, but at the same time, he was booking his own territory and sort of, you know, effectively booking himself as the champion. I mean, look, if I ran my own territory, I could be champion 50,000 times also. But that really wasn't the case of Bruno. You know, he worked in New York, I guess, right, as they referred to it back then. And he was just such a big draw with the Italian community and just that whole fan base in New York and Philadelphia and sort of on the East Coast there that they kept him on top for a very long time. And he had a lot of sellouts at Madison Square Garden. I'm not sure how accurate some of those numbers are, but still very impressive. And had the falling out with Vince McMahon. He did not like what he was seeing as far as all of the big muscled up guys like Hogan coming in the 80s and the steroids and all that kind of stuff. And he was an announcer for a while, and they kind of convinced him to come back and do a few more matches. I can remember him having some matches with Randy Savage in the mid-80s, some matches in Madison Square Garden. And then he, you know, retired finally and just was on very, very bitter terms with the company. Very bad terms with them. And then finally, a number of years ago, thanks in large part to the efforts of one Triple H, who has tried to repair a lot of burn bridges between Vince McMahon and some other big names from the past, he was able to bring Bruno back into the fold. And Bruno made amends with Vince McMahon. He agreed to come in and be inducted into the Hall of Fame. I think that was back in 2013. And again, in that speech, told all of those stories about coming up as a kid and being sick and coming to this country and getting into the wrestling business. And it was really cool that he was able to, make amends with Vince and come in, and they did the whole big bronze statue for him and for him to be honored in a way that he should have been honored. There were a lot of younger fans, I'm sure, who had no idea who he was, you know, and now they do because he did come back. Now, I got to see Bruno live, I guess besides at his Hall of Fame induction, I'm pretty sure I was there, but I got to see him live at the Manhattan Center back in 2006. At the Ring of Honor Glory by Honor 5 Night 2 show, which is a mouthful, but that show is still one of the best wrestling shows that I've ever attended, of any kind, Ring of Honor, WWE, or otherwise. Bruno came out. He was the special guest that night. He came out, and again, anybody, if you know the Manhattan Center, it's literally in the shadow of Madison Square. I mean, Madison Square Garden is like right across the street, and it was cool to see Bruno so close to the Garden, right, where he was this big name for so long, and he came out, and he gave a speech in the ring, and I remember the entire Ring of Honor roster, or most of it, just surrounding the ring, absorbing every word that Bruno was saying, just hanging on every word the man said, and it was just a really cool, it was a cool speech, and it was a really cool moment, and I was really happy to be there. I still have some photos I took on my disposable camera because I didn't have, we didn't have cameras on our phones back then. So I had to bring my disposable, or maybe you did, but I didn't have one. So I had my crappy disposable camera, which indoors did not take very good photos. They were pretty dark, but I always thought it was also kind of cool that I shared a birthday with Bruno, October 6th. You know, we both shared the same birth. Of course, I share the same birthday with Dixie Carter as well. I don't know how to feel about that, but I always thought that was kind of cool. And now there will be no more birthdays for Bruno, which makes me very sad. But they are airing a documentary honoring him, and it's probably like an hour long or so, about the career, the life and times of Bruno Sammartino. It's after Raw this Monday night. It'll be airing on the WWE Network for anybody who wants to check that out. Unfortunately, Bruno was not the only person that we lost this week. Number one, Paul Jones, also passed away this week. Real name Al Frederick, 75 years old, no cause of death yet. He was a star in the Mid-Atlantic region in the 70s into the 80s. He managed a stable late in his career called Paul Jones's Army. And he managed a bunch of names. He managed Rick Rude at one point, Manny Fernandez, the Powers of Pain, the Assassins, Abdullah the Butcher, Superstar Billy Graham, and a bunch of other names. I didn't see much of him myself. I was aware of the name. I knew he was a wrestler. I knew he was a star. It was either in the NWA or Mid-Atlantic. Turns out it was Mid-Atlantic. But nonetheless, yet another wrestling passing this week. And we also lost two actors this week. Harry Anderson. I was a big fan of his work on Night Court, which is still one of my favorite sitcoms. He was only 65, died of cardiac arrest. I know people may talk about, you know, Harry the Hat on Cheers. He had a recurring role on Cheers, which is this other iconic sitcom. And they talk about his role on the It miniseries back in the early 90s. To me, though, he will always be Judge Harold T. Stone. The only reason I even know who Mel Torme is because of Harry Anderson. And if you don't know who Mel Torme is, you need to look him up. Vern Troyer also died. Mini-Me. I hate to say that. I mean, the guy shouldn't, you know, he shouldn't be known for the rest of eternity as Mini-Me, but he kind of will. No official cause of death. He was, I believe, 49. So again, a young guy. But he has ties to WWE in that he was a big fan and he guest hosted an episode of Raw back in 2009. So he did have a role with WWE. He died this week. Barbara Bush died this week, 92 years old. She lived the most out of all of them. And Avicii died this week. He lived the least out of all of them, only 28 years old. If you put the radio on at all in the last 5 years, or if you walked into a club somewhere, I guarantee you heard this guy's music. So yeah, he passed away this week. So I'm glad that week is over. Let's put that week in the rearview mirror and move forward. But before we move forward, I guess I should just mention this. The other big story that broke earlier in the week. It was like right after I did the podcast last week. And that is that Nikki Bella and John Cena are no longer an item. They are not getting married. They were supposed to get married in the next few weeks. In fact, there was a wedding planned down in Mexico on Cinco de Mayo. And that will no longer be happening. And, you know, there's a lot of conflicting reports about who called off the wedding. And I literally, just people will say one thing and then, you know, these other things like Us Weekly or TMZ will say something else. And I've lost track and don't care enough to go back and track exactly who said what. But there are reports that it was her decision, that she could just tell that John wasn't into this and she had enough and she called it off. And then there are other reports that suggest that it was Cena's decision. He got cold feet at the last second and that Nikki is just absolutely devastated. I can believe either way. I mean, Cena's been posting some pretty cryptic stuff on his Twitter, which he doesn't always do. So that makes me think, well, maybe she did break it off. You know, maybe he is upset about this. They have that Total Bellas show, or Total Bellas or Total Divas? There's one of those shows is about to premiere in a few weeks, I think, May 20th, I think. One of those shows is coming back, and apparently the season-long storyline is going to be built all around this wedding, and it's supposed to end. The season was supposed to end with the wedding, so I'm not sure how they're going to handle that now. This whole thing, to me, it's not really all that much of a surprise, right? I mean, Cena doesn't want kids. Nikki clearly wants to have kids, and it always seemed to me like John Cena had to be convinced to put a ring on this woman's finger, and then finally he did it. They came up, or Vince McMahon came up with this great idea to turn it into an angle, and I don't believe the whole thing was an angle. I think they just took something real, and they decided to, you know, turn it into a storyline. For example, I'm convinced that he popped the question to her and officially got engaged to her weeks and weeks before WrestleMania last year. I have nothing to base that on other than my own gut intuition. I don't think the actual engagement came at WrestleMania. I don't think she was surprised. I mean, she's not a stupid person. She could see it coming from a mile away. And I'm sure she was being asked about it multiple times in the build-up to that show. So I don't buy for a second that she was caught by surprise and the actual engagement came at WrestleMania in the ring. That's complete bullshit. I don't buy that. But I think they had this idea, and they, again, it made for a great moment, although looking back on it now, it's not so great. But it just feels like this dude had to be dragged kicking and screaming every step of the way into this. And maybe that was all just a put on for the cameras, and that's not how John Cena really is. I don't believe that. I think he is that way. I mean, you know, he just doesn't seem like the kind of guy, based on things he said in interviews and such, that he is somebody who is ready to settle down and have a family. You know, he's getting more and more opportunities in Hollywood. If you don't want to get married and you don't want to have kids, then guess what? Don't get married and don't have kids. The guy's already been divorced once. Better to call it off now than to get married and regret doing that later on. Because that's not fair to anybody. That's not fair to him. and his bank account. That's not fair to her. I mean, the poor woman's not getting any younger. If she wants to have kids, then you know what? You gotta move on and let her find somebody else and go have 15 kids. This does render not one but two big WrestleMania segments from last year's show completely meaningless. The Cena-Nikki proposal, which is not going to make any WrestleMania highlight packages now. And Undertaker leaving his gear in the middle of the ring after his match with Roman Reigns and then vanishing into the night. Nice moments that now you go back and watch them and just think what a gigantic waste of time that was. And as far as, you know, Nikki's role in the company, I see people joking, well, that's the end of the Bella push in WWE. And I mean, yeah, these people are obviously talking out of their assholes. I mean, the Bellas are big stars in WWE. They build, you know, they have a lot of equity in this company. You know, they build the total divas and the total Bella franchises around them. So, Cena or no Cena, the Bellas are not going anywhere. In fact, Nikki was on Twitter teasing, because WWE.com put an article up saying what, you know, we would like to see, you know, women's tag team titles coming to SmackDown Live soon. And there's been so many seeds planted that, you know, it's just a matter of time before we get those women's tag team belts, at least on one of the brands. And so Nikki must have seen the article, and she was kind of, there was this little kayfabe back and forth on Twitter with the Bellas and Peyton Royce and Billie Kay. They were teasing that that could be a match at some point, possibly for women's tag team titles. So the Bellas aren't going anywhere, whether you like them or not. And that's really all I have to say about the whole Cena Nikki thing. Let them both move on. Let them both be happy. If Cena wants to, you know, have the bachelor life as he breaks into Hollywood, hell, go for it, right? I mean, that's what it's all about. But, you know, who broke it off and this and that? Both camps have their stories. Both camps leak news that makes them look better. That's how this works. That's why you see conflicting stories out there. I mean, it happens all the time with celebrity divorces and stuff. And it's funny because, you know, at work, we've been brought in on occasion to sort of assist one side or the other when it comes to some of these, like, celebrity breakups and celebrity divorces. And it's just comical. You know, you have members from one camp leaking this to this publication, and then the other person is leaking this news to that publication. And they're sort of sparring in the media, not directly, but they're doing it through intermediaries, right? So that's kind of what's going on here, although I don't get the sense that there's, you know, a lot of bad blood here. I think that they'll, you know, maybe they'll still be friends. Who knows? Who cares? I don't know. Let's talk about something I'm far more interested in discussing here. Let's talk about the Superstar Shakeup. Superstar Shakeup happened this past week. Now, when I did my little shakeup predictions or hopes, I said Jinder to Raw, Jinder Mahal to Raw with the U.S. title, Asuka to Raw, Asuka to SmackDown, and Drew McIntyre to Raw. And those were the ones I got right. The other ones, not so much. I was largely, you know, I think pretty satisfied, especially as far as SmackDown goes with these moves, because when you really look at these rosters now, when you look at the makeup of these shows, SmackDown cleaned up. This was, to me, the polar opposite of what happened to SmackDown last year, where you had the shakeup and SmackDown's quality declined. Just every week, every month, it just seemed that SmackDown was far worse after the shakeup last year. And I think it's going to be the opposite now. I think this has strengthened SmackDown. I think this makes SmackDown of the two the must-see show. And, you know, there were some other things, like putting Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, who are now on Raw, putting them on Raw the way they did on the show, I just thought was completely lazy. Right? So you had these two guys who were fired from SmackDown. They were fired from SmackDown because they beat up the commissioner, they beat up the general manager, they had a chance to win their jobs back at WrestleMania, and they lost. So seemingly, they were done with SmackDown Live, right? Now, they tried to come to Raw. They had tried to come to Raw previously, and Kurt Angle showed no interest. And then Kurt said, well, look, I'll give you guys one chance. I have one spot open. This is what Kurt had said after WrestleMania. Now, I want you to think about that. Kurt told them a few weeks ago, well, I only have one spot open. You guys can wrestle for it and see which one of you gets the job. But then we have a superstar shakeup, and guys are moving left and right. It's like, where is this one spot left open coming from? But anyway, they went to a no contest. They both lost. And Kurt said, well, by virtue of them, you know, coming to a no contest, neither man gets a job on Monday Night Raw. And so now it's like, well, what are they going to do? We have the shakeup. Are they going to be, you know, they're just going to go undrafted? I suggested that you have a little bit of fun with it, right? Because Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are not, you know, top guys at the moment who need to be on television every single week. You could afford to be a little creative with these guys. Keep them off TV for at least a few weeks. Send them to NXT. Maybe Regal has no interest in them and he sends them away. Maybe they have one match at NXT and they lose that one too. It gives us one cool match in NXT where you can do Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn against, you know, I don't know, Johnny Gargano and Aleister Black. What a match that could be, right? And then they lose. And then it's like, well, these guys have no other place to go. Maybe you send them to Evolve and let them do a couple of indie matches to you know, build interest in where they're going to end up. And then eventually they come back. You figure out a way to get them back on TV. Instead, they showed up on Raw. They showed up on Raw, and the reason being, Stephanie McMahon overruled Kurt Angle, because Kurt apparently makes rash decisions or something, and so Stephanie overruled Kurt and allowed Owens and Zayn both to come to Raw. The same Kevin Owens, by the way, who assaulted her father on television a few months ago. Now, I mean, I guess you can just explain it away by saying she's just screwing with Kurt after the match of WrestleMania and what happened with Rousey. She's, you know, taking it out on her GM by screwing with him. But I still thought this was a very weak way to get these guys back on TV. No patience. This is a company that just has no patience at all with anything. Except Roman Reigns. Vince McMahon has been waiting very patiently for about 3 years now to get the fans to like Roman Reigns. See, with Reigns, Vince is like a cat. He's like a cat. You ever try to have a staring contest with a cat? You will lose. You will lose every single time. He has the patience of a cat with Roman Reigns. And with everything else and everyone else, he's got the patience of a gnat. That's the difference. I did like The Miz, though. I will say in that Miz TV segment on Monday, I liked The Miz. I loved his reaction to the news that Daniel Bryan had requested he be drafted to SmackDown. And when he found out that he was going to SmackDown and without the Miztourage, they zoomed in on Miz's face. I thought that was great. That first match between the two of them is going to be huge. I hope they can hold off on that and milk it for all it's worth. You know, you have Miz coming up with different illnesses or injuries and all sorts of reasons to explain why he can't wrestle Daniel Bryan. And just keep building and building and building until you have that first match. I still like my idea of, you know, and I hit it with Corbin last year, and I'm hoping I hit it with Miz this year. In January, I said I would have Miz, and I predicted Miz would win Money in the Bank this year. And I'm hoping that they actually stick to that and do that and go with that idea. And you could do one of two things. You can have Miz win Money in the Bank and then cash in and win the WWE Championship shortly thereafter. And then have Daniel Bryan, who's got to beat a few people first, I think, before he could challenge for the title. But he beats a few people, and then you build to Bryan taking the championship from Miz maybe at WrestleMania next year. Because you can do any number of big matches with Daniel Bryan at a big show like WrestleMania. Bryan and Styles, Bryan and Joe, those are all, Bryan and Nakamura, those are all matches that are WrestleMania worthy. But to me, Bryan and Miz could be a WrestleMania main event type match. Because this thing has been building for so many years. And I think people would just be dying to see Bryan beat Miz of all people and get that title back. You know, after the way his title run had to end the last time and away for 3 years. It's just a great story. You could do that. Or you can even have Bryan win the championship. You can have him win the championship first later this year. And then Miz immediately cashes in and takes it away from him. And just gets instant mega heat. And then Bryan can chase him for it. Either one of those scenarios, I'm okay with. Although, if I had a preference, I'd rather Bryan just chase the title and then win it and, you know, not have this quick sort of bastard title run and then take it away and play hot potato with it. But Miz going to SmackDown and doing something eventually with Bryan, I think, is just it's a great idea. And I think it was the right move to make. Now, let's go down the list of moves here. Let's first talk about SmackDown to Raw. These are the people that have moved from the SmackDown Live roster to the Monday Night Raw roster. We have Bobby Roode, who is now on Raw. Jinder Mahal, who lost the United States Championship in his first night. Not only his first night, the first like segment or two segments on the show. He came out, and then he got put in a match with Jeff Hardy, and he lost. So he is no longer the United States champion. But Jinder is on Raw. Baron Corbin is coming to Monday Night Raw. Get excited about that. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, as I mentioned, they are now on Raw. Dolph Ziggler is on Raw. And with him is Drew McIntyre. Now, Drew McIntyre, I had pitched last week that he should be moved to Raw, and he was, although I didn't expect him to be paired off with Dolph Ziggler. I'm going to give this time. I'm going to see where this goes. I certainly hope that they are not relegated to just being a tag team, although it seems that they are going to be a tag team. Maybe they'll just be singles, but they wrestle tag team matches, and they sort of are like a little posse and not just a tag team. I don't know. We have to wait and see. McIntyre just looks like a complete, I mean, you look at this guy, he just screams pro wrestler. This guy is just, he's in good shape, he's jacked, he's tall, he's got the long hair. It's everything that Vince McMahon should love in a professional wrestler. This guy is much better than being relegated to a tag team with someone, but it's a way to get him, I guess, back on TV. It looks like he'll be a heel. The both of them are going to be heels. And, you know, look, for one night, they had a cool little finish they used on Titus Worldwide where they both hit their moves at the same time. Ziggler hit a zigzag at the same moment that McIntyre hit the Claymore kick, so that was cool. And for Ziggler, it's probably the best thing that could happen to him because on his own, the guy is just dead as a doornail. With McIntyre, who I think has a bright future on this show, it's someone for Ziggler to play off of. I don't know if he'll be like a bodyguard for Ziggler. I don't know if it's that kind of dynamic they're going for. But it's someone for Ziggler to play off of. It's someone who I think can help make Ziggler more relevant. Maybe Ziggler will start winning some matches, which is the only way to try to give the guy credibility, right? He's got to start to be a winner. People aren't going to back a loser. If all you do is lose, right? After a while, nobody cares. So this probably is better for Ziggler, I would say, than it is for McIntyre. McIntyre doesn't need Dolph. But I am interested to see where they go with this. It also means that all three members of 3MB are back on the same show, which is what I said would happen last week. I don't want to give you-know-who any ideas. Because to me, if Drew McIntyre doesn't wrestle for that Universal title at some point this year and have a program with Roman Reigns, these people are brain dead. They're brain dead. And maybe it doesn't happen this year. Maybe it's early next year or something. But in the near future, if this guy isn't challenging Reigns for the championship, they're brain dead. Breezango has moved from SmackDown to Raw. Breezango got a fluke win over The Bar on this show, and now we know why. Sheamus and Cesaro were doing the honors, leaving the territory, as they say. The Ascension is now on Raw. Which means two things. Number one, it means that the Ascension can remain in all of the Fashion Police segments that they do. And it also would seem to me that if there are two guys who would be ripe to join Matt Hardy's Woken universe, the Ascension would fit right in there. So if you want to have them as sort of background comedy players as part of the broken stuff and get them, you know, put them in a real role on the show, make them part of that group, I think that would be the perfect place to use them, would be part of that Woken stuff. The Riot Squad is now on Raw. They attacked Sasha Banks and Bayley during their match last Monday, so we got no winner in the big Sasha-Bayley showdown on TV. Natalya has moved from SmackDown to Raw, and she is apparently a babyface, at least for now. I don't suspect that's going to last very long. But they introduced her. She walked into a backstage segment where Ronda Rousey was being interviewed. And Natty walks in and they're hugging. Oh, they're like best friends. They're best friends. And later on, Natty beat Mandy Rose, got attacked by Mandy and Sonya Deville, and was saved by Ronda Rousey. Ronda came out, big reaction, made the big save for Natty. So right now, Natty and Ronda, I mean, they're tight, right? They're like, best friends here. And that won't last very long. So it would seem to me that at some point they will build to a Natty Ronda match. And I think that's perfect. I actually think that's a great idea. Because Ronda needs a few people to beat before she gets a title shot or before she moves on up to somebody much bigger on the totem pole. She's got to beat a few people. This is the perfect role for Natalya. Because Natalya really, I think, is somebody that you can use to help elevate other stars, Ronda being one of them. And it's a great role for her to be in, working with Ronda Rousey. And Natty's a great wrestler and has been doing this for a while. So it's not, you know, it's good that Ronda will have somebody who's more than competent to work with, who can make her look good and make everything she does look like $1 million. They could do the turn at some point to get more sympathy on Ronda when Natty turns on her. So I think it's actually a great role, and it's an easy win. You know, when the time comes, maybe on a pay-per-view in a couple of months or something, it's a great way, I think, to use Natty. And it's an easy win for Ronda, so it's a win for everybody. Zack Ryder and Mojo Rawley are both on this show, so I don't know if they'll continue their feud. I can't really bring myself to care about it, but they are both on the same show again. Mike Kanellis, who at some point I would imagine will end up back on TV, but he is now on Raw after barely being on SmackDown. And the last move here, and this did not get a lot of play, and this was not something that happened on the show. This happened off the air. But I am very excited to see what they might do with this guy, and that is Chad Gable. Chad Gable has been split away from Shelton Benjamin. He is now on Monday Night Raw, which means he is now on the same brand with Kurt Angle, which means we can get some backstage, maybe comedy segments with Kurt and with Chad. And I said from the beginning that if they were going to do this stupid illegitimate son storyline, I would have went with Chad Gable over Jason Jordan. And Jordan made the most of it. It's a kind of a shame that he got hurt when he did, because Jordan was finally, it was clicking for him as a heel. Like, people genuinely, you know, hated this guy. And he was having some really good matches, and he was working with people like Seth Rollins, and everything seemed to be going his way, and then he got hurt. And for his sake, I hope he can keep up that momentum when he comes back. But I would have gone with Chad Gable. I think of the two, that would have been more believable, because I do see a lot of similarities, even beyond the Olympic stuff, between Kurt Angle and Chad Gable. So A, I'm happy that the two of them are on the same show, and B, they can do something with Gable and Jordan. I don't know if maybe, you know, you kind of put the two of them back together as a team for a limited time, or when Jordan comes back, if he goes right back into the singles hunt, maybe he can have some matches or a feud even with Chad Gable. But I definitely would not, I mean, that's sort of this loose end that was never tied up, and I would go back and do something there. The question is, how do they see Chad Gable, right? I mean, is Chad Gable going to be any better off on Raw than he was on SmackDown? Is he going to be worse? Is he going to be kind of lumped into the same category as people like Mojo Rawley and The Ascension and Breezango and Zack Ryder? I think that would be a huge mistake, because I think there's a lot of talent there. I think he's a very, there's a lot of personality there too, and a lot of humor, and I think that he could go very far if Vince McMahon and the powers that be see the kind of talent that this guy has. You know, and I recognized it right away in NXT. You know, still one of the coolest things I ever saw was on that, it was in the Dusty Classic, the first one they did, when he was in there. I think who was he teaming with? I guess it was him and Jordan against, I think it was Corbin and Rhino. Go back and find that tag team match they had, because there's the one rolling German spot that he did with Corbin that impressed the hell out of me. The Chaos Theory, right? And Corbin's not a small dude. Gable is compared to Corbin, and he picked him up like he was nothing. And I still to this day love the finish to that match where, I don't even know how you describe it, but, you know, Gable came off the ropes and was doing this whole tilt-a-whirl thing right into the End of Days. It was this great finish. And when Gable came to SmackDown, I was hoping they would do something, maybe even a whole program with him and Corbin, because I think the whole big man, little man dynamic worked well between them. And we got like one match on TV, and I think it was a squash, and they never did anything again. Well, guess what? Gable and Corbin are both now back on the same brand. So you could still do something with the two of them if you really wanted to. So please, I implore WWE, do something with Chad Gable. Don't waste this guy's potential, because I think he's got a lot of it. And to me, that's what the shakeup is all about, right? You shake things up, you bring up some people from NXT, and you know, you have people who maybe weren't getting opportunities here that now will get some opportunities. I'm not devastated by them breaking up him and Benjamin. They made for a good team, but it was a dead team. They weren't going anywhere, right? And when Benjamin came back, I thought one of the reasons they were looking for people like him, and they were going to bring back people maybe like Carlito or John Morrison, who didn't end up coming back, but they wanted to bring people like Benjamin back to work in some way with these newer stars and with some of the younger guys, and whether it was teaming with them or putting them over or whatever, and It was something for Gable to do, but I don't know that being in that tag team really helped him or did anything for him. So splitting them up and trying something new with him is something I'm not opposed to. Now, let me just mention about Raw last Monday on that show. Mickie James did the best sell job that I have ever seen in all my life for that eclipse from Ember Moon. If you missed it, you got to go back and watch the end of that match. That needs to be in every Ember Moon highlight video for the rest of that woman's career. That was a great sell job on that move. The main event they slapped together was just a big 10-man tag. It was Braun Strowman, Bobby Roode, Bobby Lashley, Seth Rollins, and Finn Balor beating The Miz. The Miztourage, Kevin Owens, and Sami Zayn. Braun Strowman was super over in this match. In fact, there was one point where Bobby Roode tagged in, and people sounded disappointed. They actually sounded dejected. It was Roode and not Strowman coming into the match, which to me doesn't speak well to Bobby Roode's future as a babyface. Hopefully that changes soon, because I still say he's miscast. But it does speak to them hopefully doing more with Braun Strowman. It's, you know, maybe when people chant Strowman, Vince is back there thinking that they're actually chanting Roman. Maybe that's the problem here. I don't know. So that was Raw. Now these are the Raw to SmackDown moves in the Superstar Shakeup. We had the new U.S. champion, Jeff Hardy, moving from Raw to SmackDown. The Miz, who I mentioned a little while ago. Samoa Joe, which was the big surprise for me. I did not see Samoa Joe going from Raw to SmackDown, especially that they're building up something with Joe and Roman Reigns. So the last thing I would have expected was Joe to move. Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville have moved as well. And by the way, I forgot to mention before, you know, when I was talking about the Ronda Rousey and Natty stuff from Monday night, when Ronda came out to make the save, they actually had Sonya Deville go in there, and she was going to stand up to Ronda Rousey, and then Ronda gave her like a judo throw or something, and it looked cool. It got a great reaction. It was sort of like the MMA person against the would-be MMA person. I know she's had a few amateur fights, but I mean, this is what I said when they first started doing the MMA thing with Sonya Deville. I said, you know, they've got Shayna Baszler on the way in, they've got Ronda Rousey who they're courting. It's like, you're going to have plenty of legitimate mixed martial arts like stars and talent from that universe. I don't know that bodes well for this gimmick here for Sonya Deville. And so she got put on her ass on Monday night. But her and Mandy Rose are now on SmackDown, which makes sense because Paige is the GM for SmackDown and Paige was with them at Absolution. And so why wouldn't she want them on Tuesday nights? We had a video package for Sanity moving to SmackDown without Nikki Cross. Eric Young, Killian Dane, and Alexander Wolf were the only ones featured in this video. There was no Nikki Cross to be found. Now, this does not mean for sure that Nikki Cross is not coming in with them. Maybe they're going to hold her off as a surprise, or maybe she's got other plans. Maybe they have other plans for her, and she's going to eventually be brought up separately and not as part of the Sanity faction. You know, just because they have a shakeup doesn't mean that you need to blow through all of your NXT call-ups and all of your big debuts in one fell swoop. I would like for them to save some debuts, you know, and scatter them throughout the year. Why do you have to do them all in April? So that does not mean that Nikki Cross is not soon going to be on the main roster. But it doesn't look like she's going to be part of Sanity anymore. R-Truth is now on SmackDown, even though he thought he was on Raw. So he's still playing the goofball. Big Cass is back, and he is on SmackDown. Asuka was the other big name that was drafted over from Raw to SmackDown. Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson, Sheamus and Cesaro are on SmackDown, as is Andrade Cien Almas and Zelina Vega, which I was very happy to see. Actually, that was the other one I had called last week. And I was very happy to see them soon debuting on SmackDown. It's actually scary how many A-list programs are waiting in the wings for Daniel Bryan on this show now. AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, Samoa Joe, The Miz, Cien Almas. But first, we've got Big Cass. We've got Big Cass and Daniel Bryan. Let's talk about this SmackDown show and this poll. I put a Twitter poll up, right? 2,600 votes. 91% of you voted thumbs up on SmackDown from Tuesday night. Only 9% voted thumbs down. I strongly disagree with that number. Now, the shakeup moves may have been a 91%. Because I thought SmackDown kicked Raw's ass in this draft. And that's not to say that Raw's in poor shape. Raw's got a pretty decent roster themselves. I just think in terms of the moves and strengthening the show, SmackDown kicked Raw's ass all day and all night. So yeah, the shakeup moves may have been a 91. especially now that we have Styles and Bryan and Joe all on the same show. But the show itself on Tuesday, I thought, was mostly a dud. There really wasn't a whole lot beyond the shakeup that happened. And there were tons of short matches, 30-second matches, minute-long matches. I don't know where people are getting 91% from for the show on Tuesday, because the show wasn't that good. Jeff Hardy, he walked out right past Randy Orton. Randy Orton was on his way to the ring to challenge Shelton Benjamin after Benjamin laid down an open challenge. Hardy accepted instead, and he beat Benjamin with the, Swanton Bomb. I felt like I had been transported back in time to 2008. So it'll now be Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton for the United States Championship at Backlash, which means no Jinder Mahal versus Randy Orton match. You can't see right now, but I've got a big fat smile on my face. Although I will say I am still disappointed to this very day, 10 years later, by the match that Orton and Hardy had at the Royal Rumble in 2008. Hopefully they can make up for it here. I cannot tell you how deflated it was to be inside Madison Square Garden that night when Orton hit that RKO truly out of nowhere on Jeff Hardy and just pinned him in the middle of the ring. Hardy had so much momentum going into that show. And either you thought he was winning the championship, you hoped he was winning the championship, or even if he didn't, you were expecting, you know, a bunch of near falls and building to this big finish, and it just came so abruptly and so out of nowhere that it just almost killed the crowd. And we'll see what they can do, I guess, here. 10 years later, we're going to get Orton and Hardy again. Samoa Joe, I mentioned before, him coming over was a nice surprise. There was a very short squash of Sin Cara. And then Joe got on the mic, which is what he does best. And he cut a promo saying that his mere absence on the show means that everybody else has had it easy. And they have all convinced themselves that they are better than they really are. And he said he's going to put Daniel Bryan to sleep. He's going to decimate AJ Styles. He's going to defang the Viper, Randy Orton. Then he talked about becoming both the Intercontinental Champion and the WWE Champion. And everybody was confused. Everybody, I mean, I wasn't confused. I think, I'm sure some of you weren't confused. But it just seemed like there was no reaction to the line. And then I see on Twitter, people are like, oh, he botched it. What is he talking about? The IC title. He said the wrong belt. And apparently people just had no idea that he is challenging for the Intercontinental Championship. He is in that four-way or five-way, whatever it turns out to be, ladder match at the Greatest Royal Rumble this Friday. And, you know, I can excuse people, I guess, because how would they know? I don't know that they've announced that match on TV yet. Maybe they have. I'm not sure they have. But yes, he is, in fact, challenging for the IC title. He is one of at least three, if not four, other people who are going to be part of that ladder match on Friday in Saudi Arabia. So that's what he meant when he said that he can be the IC champion and he could end up being WWE champion, which is true. We had what they called a Melibration on this show, which was Carmella coming out and celebrating her Money in the Bank cash-in on Charlotte Flair. And she was talking about how her briefcase was named Frankie, and now she's named her title. It's called Cleopatra, and she's giving them pet names. And then Charlotte eventually came out, and they were going back and forth on the microphone. And then the Iconics came out, Peyton Royce and Billy Kay, and they were mocking Charlotte. So we had this three-way promo going on here. And I thought every single woman in this segment was annoying as all hell, which I suppose is what Carmella was going for. But I'm not so sure about the others. All I know is I just wanted to hit the mute button on my remote control for about halfway through the segment. I almost couldn't take it anymore. These women were so annoying. Charlotte got beaten down by Peyton and Billy before Becky Lynch made the save. That led to a match with Charlotte beating Peyton Royce clean with the figure eight. Peyton's first main roster singles match. And it's a loss. After the match, Carmella joined in yet another beatdown on Charlotte. Only this time it was Asuka who came out to make the save. So Asuka and Charlotte on the same show. I did not expect the two of them to end up on the same show together. I thought at least that Charlotte would come to Raw, but that did not happen. And we had Bryan and Styles in the main event taking on Rusev and Aiden English. And this went down this way. Bryan hit Rusev with a running knee, had the match won seemingly, but then Shinsuke Nakamura popped up out of nowhere and he gave AJ Styles what else? A low blow, because he is Nutcracker Nakamura. In fact, if you watch our Pro Wrestling Tee store in the next few days, we're going to have a new shirt going up that is going to have something to do with this. But yes, Nutcracker Nakamura strikes again. Daniel Bryan sees what's going on here, but when he turned around, Big Cass appeared, gave him the big boot, mowed him down. Referee called for the bell, and we went off the air with Big Cass standing over the lifeless body of Daniel Bryan. And where we go from here remains to be seen. Are they just going to go into a Bryan-Cass feud? Because Cass had encountered Bryan backstage earlier on, and he insulted him. He was insulting his height and how much taller than him he was. And, you know, are we headed for a Bryan-Cass program? And I've seen, there's been a lot of talk also about, well, maybe Cass is going to be linked up with Miz. Maybe he'll be a bodyguard for the Miz. I think that could definitely work. In fact, of all the scenarios here that have been laid out, I like that one the most. Especially given that Miz now no longer has any backup. It would make sense that the first thing Miz would do, because he's terrified of having to get in the ring with Daniel Bryan, and he knows he doesn't have Dallas and Axel to back him up anymore, it makes sense that the first thing this guy would do was try to find some hired help. And so, no Miztourage, he's got to go out and find somebody else, and maybe he has worked out an arrangement with Big Cass to take out Daniel Bryan, and maybe he'll be the bodyguard for The Miz. And maybe he can even, you know, to keep Miz and Bryan apart for a while, maybe Cass will step in and have a few matches, you know, with Daniel Bryan. And Cass also, you know, if you look at him, he worked a lot better with the smaller guy doing the talking for him. So I think him and Miz, as a sort of Michaels Diesel type of combination, could absolutely work. But hopefully they get past this whole Bryan Cass thing very quickly, because I'm not so sure that is a match that a lot of people want to see. So just to sum up the whole shakeup thing, I think both shows are in a position where they both have a lot of talent. Even Raw. You know, I think SmackDown clearly won this shakeup, but I think Raw still has, you know, Lesnar for whatever that's worth at this point as far as him having a few matches a year. If he even sticks around. We're not even sure that Lesnar is in it for the long haul. But they've got The Shield, all three members of The Shield still on the same brand. And certainly Rollins is super over right now. Finn Balor no longer has his club with him, but he's still on Raw. Bobby Lashley is on Raw. Bobby Roode is on Raw. Braun Strowman, a lot of B's on Raw. And so they've, you know, and if you look at the women's division, Nia Jax obviously now the queen of that division. And they still have Alexa with Mickey. But they've got Ember Moon. They've got Ronda Rousey. Maybe that's why they didn't move Charlotte over, because I figured you don't want Charlotte and Asuka on the same show because you want to have that one big baby face, right, in the women's division. And so maybe they'll move Becky over with Charlotte, and they'll move Sasha and Bayley over to SmackDown, and they didn't do any of that. But maybe they just see it as, well, you know, Nia Jax is a big baby face right now, and Ronda Rousey is a huge baby face, even if she's not on TV every single week. I think, you know, the division, you know, that division looks strong. I like the way that the SmackDown women's division is obviously, I think, in a, on paper anyway, a lot stronger now. The tag team division, I think, on SmackDown looks stronger. And you look at that main event, you look at that top cluster of guys on SmackDown, and people talk about that whole SmackDown 6 period, right? So you had Benoit, and you had Eddie, and Angle, and all those people from, like, was it 2002, 2003, right? Mysterio. Well, you look at the top of the card on SmackDown now, and I think that the SmackDown 5 or 6 or whatever you wanna call it is even stronger. It's in a position to be even stronger than that whole SmackDown 6 period and that whole SmackDown 6 cluster was back in 02. You know, you've got AJ, you've got Nakamura, you've got Joe, you've got Bryan. Miz coming over again, I think, was the best move to make for him. You know, can Cass get over as a big star? I don't know about that. That remains to be seen. But they got a lot of talent on SmackDown right now. There's no doubt about it. John Cena still floating around as a free agent. Randy Orton, Jeff Hardy. You know, Orton hasn't exactly lit the world on fire for me, but maybe working with some new people like, you know, Joe and a heel Nakamura, you know, maybe that could be fun. So I am very optimistic about SmackDown moving forward. I could not have said that about this show a few weeks ago, but I definitely think they got the better end of it. Let's talk about the greatest Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia. It is coming up this Friday, the 27th. I will be recording a sound-off extra to post on YouTube as I would for any other pay-per-view. And so I will do a full YouTube review for this show the day after. I don't know if it'll be up early that morning or if it'll be later that morning, but watch for it on Saturday. I'll have my full review on YouTube at that point. There were reports of a possible coup of the Saudi government the other day and a drone attack, but it turned out to be a toy drone, and it got shot down. This was not the week for that to happen. Vince McMahon probably had a coronary when he read this story. And seeing all those dollar bills going up in smoke, or however they're paying him. Maybe they're paying him in gold bullion. I don't know. But they're going all out for this show. This is officially a five-hour show. 6 hours, if you count the one-hour pre-show that starts at 11 a.m. Eastern. But the runtime is set to be 12 p.m., officially 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. That is a five-hour show. And it would make the second five-hour show, the WWE, or five-hour plus show that WWE has had, in not only in the same year, in the same month. We already had WrestleMania. And now, just a few weeks later, we have the Greatest Royal Rumble. Now, it's also going to be airing on traditional pay-per-view for the price tag of $54.99. Or you can just subscribe to the network and get it free, because they're still doing the whole free month or 3 months or whatever. Unless you live in a remote area, like in the wilderness somewhere with crappy internet, please do not pay $54.99 for this show when you can get it for free. Please don't do that. Been a lot of talk about the whole cultural aspect of this show, and obviously the women are not going to be there. The women are not allowed to compete. Is this a propaganda thing? Of course it is. You know, the Saudis are paying WWE, apparently, a huge sum. I would love to know the price tag. You would think at some point that this has to come out, right? They're a publicly traded company. I'm hoping at some point we find out how much this deal is truly worth to this company. It's obviously in the many millions of dollars. But whatever it is, they're paying them a boatload of money. And WWE is not the only, you know, organization or entity that the Saudi government is courting and paying money to. This is part of this, you know, 10-year-long project, I guess, that the country is undertaking to either modernize or give the perception that they're modernizing, and they want to bring other big events, you know, to Saudi Arabia. And I've gotten a couple of emails from some of our listeners who live in Saudi Arabia. One of them actually lives in Jeddah, which is where the show is taking place. And they have been complaining loudly about the whole ticket situation. So you have a stadium there that seats over 60,000 people. Now, once you get the staging finished and everything else, it may not be 60. Maybe it'll be 50-something thousand. But there's going to be at least 50,000 people in that stadium for this show. And there's been a lot of complaints from even a couple of our own listeners, you know, who are single men who would love to be able to pay for seats, like ringside seats or seats that are in the lower bowl, you know, in the first few rows maybe. And they are not allowed to do so. Those people are being relegated, like the hardcore fans are being relegated to the cheap seats and the nosebleeds in many cases. And those first several rows are reserved, I guess, I don't know if they're reserved by the royal family for people. I believe they're reserved for families. And there's actually a requirement that, you know, if families are coming to the show, there's a requirement that it has to have at least one woman as part of the group. It's a requirement that families attending must have at least one female in the group. And you would say, well, why would that be a requirement? That's awfully bizarre. Well, it's not that bizarre at all, really, because if they're reserving seats that are in the first 5, 10, 15 rows, whatever it is, especially on the hard camera side, and they're saying that you must have women as part of your groups if you're going to buy tickets in those sections, you know, it's because they want the show to come off a certain way. They want people, when they watch the show, to see families and women all enjoying the show. Yeah, it's a total propaganda thing. Absolutely. It's absolutely propaganda. You know, does that make you uncomfortable? You know, look, it's kind of odd, I would say, to have a company like WWE, who loves to talk so openly and so, you know, vocally about the women's revolution and all these things with the women that they're doing. And now, you know, they are part of this propaganda effort by the government there, and they are not even allowed to bring their female talent over with them. So yes, that is a bit hypocritical on their part. But look, you know, it is what it is. It's to them, it's all about the money. It's all about the bottom line. They're getting a lot of money for this, and that's really, at the end of the day, what's the most important thing to them. Can they make money or not? They felt they could. They love breaking into these new areas and you know, internationally, globally. They've been trying to break into China for years. And you could say a lot of things about the Chinese regime there as well, but don't think for one second that if WWE had a chance to break into China, they wouldn't jump at the opportunity. So that's just the way it is. You know, to me, I look at this and I say, this is a pretty stacked card. It's a pretty loaded lineup. I'm not going to not watch the show. I'm not protesting the show. I'm more interested to see how the crowd comes off, because if they're going to fill those seats, the immediate seats, with people who maybe are not wrestling fans necessarily, maybe they are special guests of the royal family or something, and they're just trying to pack the stadium with people like that, I don't know that you're going to get a great reaction to a lot of these matches. If you have the really rabid hardcore wrestling fans sort of banished to the outer ends of the stadium, and you've got an open air stadium. So you have, you know, whenever you have an open air WrestleMania, you got to always worry about the acoustics there as well. You know, you could end up with a whole bunch of dead matches on the show. And believe me, the crowd and the crowd reactions do affect people's perception and enjoyment of shows like this. So I'm more interested in stuff like that and what the stage looks like and just how the event is presented. That has me more interested than anything else. The shakeup, the superstar shakeup, has sort of rendered, I think, a lot of the outcomes here very predictable, given some of the moves they made. But let's run down this card. I'll throw some predictions out there. We'll start with the Cruiserweight title. Cedric Alexander will be defending the Cruiserweight Championship on this show against the winner of a gauntlet match that will take place this Tuesday on 205 Live. I'm not sure offhand exactly who's in the gauntlet. My guess is it's going to end up being either Mustafa Ali or Buddy Murphy. Buddy Murphy did not make weight. They did a weigh-in segment. He did not make weight. He was overweight. And so for now, he is disqualified from having any championship opportunities. I suspect that may change on Tuesday, and it might be Murphy getting the shot in Saudi Arabia. But again, if it's not Murphy, it's probably Ali. Either way, I think Cedric retains. I don't see him losing the title that quickly. Jeff Hardy will defend the United States Championship against Jinder Mahal. Jinder will get his rematch. He will have a chance to bring the belt back to Monday Night Raw, which I don't see it happening. I think I'm going with Jeff Hardy as my pick. It is not impossible. It is not impossible that they switch the U.S. title on this show, give the belt back to Jinder, and maybe they only did it, you know, did what they did on Monday, that is, to allow them to do a title change in Saudi Arabia. But then the Intercontinental Championship has to change, and it has to end up on someone like Joe, or like Miz, who can then take the belt to SmackDown, because you can't have the IC and the U.S. titles on the same show. So if the U.S. title switches, it guarantees that we're going to have a new Intercontinental Champion later on in the night, assuming that that match, the ladder match, takes place later on. That is not an impossibility. So I'm not going to sit here and say there's no way that Jinder Mahal is going to win. Yeah, just like there was no way Brock Lesnar was going to win at WrestleMania, right? All the conventional wisdom goes out the window. But I think Jeff Hardy is going to retain. I think they'll keep that U.S. belt on SmackDown. The Bar is going to take on Woken Matt and Woken Bray. Woken Wyatt, I guess we'll call him, for the vacant Raw Tag Team titles. And this is one of those matches where the outcome becomes very predictable. Now that we know that Sheamus and Cesaro have moved. They are on SmackDown. So why would a SmackDown team win the Raw Tag Team titles? So we'll see Matt and Bray win the belts, I think, in Saudi Arabia. We have the Bludgeon Brothers defending the SmackDown Tag Team titles against the Usos. Bludgeon Brothers get the win. Seth Rollins will defend the Intercontinental Championship in a ladder match against Finn Balor, The Miz, and Samoa Joe. And I see some reports that in some of the advertising, Bobby Lashley has been added to the match as well. That's not official, but it's possible Lashley could get added and make it a five-way. Right now, it's a four-way. And I'm picking Seth Rollins to retain, but with a little asterisk next to it, because if Jinder Mahal wins the U.S. title and takes the belt back to Raw, then the title will change here. If the title is going to change here, it's got to end up either on Miz or Samoa Joe. And, you know, if I had to take a guess between the two of them, I would say Miz. I think Miz may well end up getting the belt back. Of the two of them, I think it would be Miz. But I'm sticking with Rollins as my pick to retain. Rusev Remember I said Rusev was bumped from the casket match with The Undertaker? It was going to be Chris Jericho against The Undertaker? Well, guess what? Somebody changed their mind. And so once again, Rusev is back in the casket match. Chris Jericho's talked about this. He doesn't care. He doesn't mind. He said there's no big story or backstage politics or backstage heat or anything like that. There's no real fun, exciting, interesting story behind it. Vince McMahon changed his mind. Simple as that. They texted him, hey, you're going to be in the casket match now. He said, fine. And later on, he got another text saying, hey, you're out of the casket match. And he said, fine. So Jericho, I guess, will be in the Rumble match. And Jericho is just, he's a total team player. He'll do whatever they want him to do. In fact, he did an interview on his tour bus with Chris Van Vliet, who's done some really, actually, awesome interviews recently with a lot of big names. He did a great one with Johnny Gargano right after the TakeOver match he had with Tommaso Ciampa. But he did an interview on Jericho's tour bus, and they were talking about a whole bunch of different things, and this was one of the things they had discussed. And he mentioned in that interview that he got the text messages saying one thing, and then they got another text saying another. And he said, look, you know, to me, it doesn't matter. You know, I'm on board. Whatever they need me to do, I'll do. He also mentioned in that interview, by the way, not to go off course too much here, but he was asked by Van Vliet, you know, look, are you doing any matches in the near future with New Japan? Because Jericho, after he lost to Kenny Omega, he was on the next show and he attacked Naito. And everybody thought, well, they're building to a Jericho-Naito match. And Jericho said, well, we tried, and they just couldn't make it happen. And he made it sound like it wasn't just an issue of scheduling. He went on to talk a lot about how, you know, in the position I'm in, I need to be compensated accordingly, and I'm putting my neck on the line here, because if WWE could turn around at one, you know, at some point and say, look, you know, you're going to keep working for New Japan, the hell with you, we're not going to use you anymore. And he could burn a bridge with Vince McMahon, because you never know, right? Vince could turn on a dime. So for him to go back and do more matches in New Japan, he said financially, because he claimed he made them millions with that first match with Omega, he said that they have to make it worth his while. So all this talk about money made me think that they either lowballed him on an offer, or they made him an offer that he wasn't entirely happy with. And so there will be no match with Naito. There are no more Jericho New Japan matches scheduled for the foreseeable future. Doesn't mean it won't happen at some point. But, you know, any talk about, well, maybe in June or July, they're just waiting until the Fozzy schedule opens up. There is nothing scheduled with Jericho and New Japan going forward. But it is Rusev. He is back in the casket match against The Undertaker. I don't think the outcome here is in doubt at all whatsoever. But the way they keep changing their mind, and it's funny, I look at this card, as stacked as this card is, and as much as they're changing their mind on this, that, and the other, you would think, like, it's not Vince McMahon booking this show. It's like some 8-year-old Saudi prince who's like, they allowed him to book the show because they're paying them so much money. And it's like a kid sitting on his throne who says, you know what, actually put this guy back in the match. I like this match better. So nothing would shock me at this point. But Undertaker will win. He will quite literally bury Rusev in the casket and roll him away. I still say for Rusev, it's a great spot to be in. Even though he's going to lose, he's wrestling The Undertaker on a big WrestleMania caliber show here. You know, 50, 60,000 people, you know, on pay-per-view, on the network. This is a big deal, and it's a big spot for him to be in. Hopefully it's not a total squash. I would hope he gets some offense in. But it's a good spot for Rusev to be in, so I don't cry for him. AJ Styles will defend the WWE Championship against Nutcracker Nakamura. AJ will retain the championship, was my prediction. John Cena, now a free agent, both on TV and in his personal life, will go one-on-one with Triple H. I'm going with John Cena here to win the match. And then we have the main event. Well, actually, I take that back. Not the main event, but we have a steel cage match for the Universal Championship. This is Vince McMahon's main event. Roman Reigns challenging Brock Lesnar for the Universal title. You know, it's hard to make any predictions when it comes to Lesnar these days. I think I still maintain, as I'm sure many of you do, that, you know, Roman will have his coronation at some point. I think it will happen on Friday. I think that the reason that the finish to the WrestleMania match got changed, and by all accounts, it was changed. You know, and it wasn't until Even Reigns himself got to the building that Sunday in New Orleans that he was told, hey, Brock's going over. The reason for that, I still believe, is that they wanted to make the Saudi Arabia show an even bigger deal. And they wanted Roman, or at least they wanted Reigns to have, you know, the potential to get a better reaction than he would have gotten in the Superdome to winning the championship. And so it could turn out to be this great coronating moment for him where he's conquered the beast and they set off pyro and the Saudi fans are going crazy for him. I don't know if it's going to work out that way or not, but I believe that's what's going on here. They wanted a big moment for the Saudi Arabia show. And at the same time, there's a much better chance that Roman will get a big babyface reaction for winning the title than he would have on American soil. So I believe they are going to change the title. It could be Brock's last match. All this talk about him signing a new contract, I'm not sure I buy into that. But I'm picking Roman Reigns. I think we're going to have a new champion here on the show. And last but not least, we have the first ever 50-man Royal Rumble match. And this will be Royal Rumble rules. They're not using the Royal Rumble name, but it's actually a Battle Royal. There will be, I don't know if it's going to be 30 seconds, if it's going to be 60 seconds, 90 seconds, but there will be intervals, and it will follow Royal Rumble rules, with the winner receiving a trophy. The WWE Espanol account tweeted out a graphic that had the trophy in it, and looking at this trophy, I would hate to have to check that thing with my baggage on my way back to the States. This trophy looks gigantic. But Kurt Angle is going to be participating in the Royal Rumble match. Chris Jericho will be in the Rumble match. Rey Mysterio has not officially been announced, but the belief is that he will be in there as well. The Great Khali is supposed to be in there. Braun Strowman, Daniel Bryan, and about 45 other men will be involved. I say men because, as I mentioned, the women will not be on this show. So every title, really, except both of the women's championships, are up for grabs on this show. Now, one of our listeners, Steve, from Virginia, sent me an email pointing out that with all of the men being in Saudi Arabia, there are no live events scheduled from the 27th of April through the 29th, I believe. And he asked, he said, should WWE put together an all-women's house show, at least one of those nights, as something of a test? With women from both Raw and SmackDown, so almost like a female super show of sorts. It's probably too late now, but I think that would have been a great idea. I think you promote it as some kind of, like I said, an all-women's super show, special attraction. You do that in one or two markets. See how it does. I mean, there's really no time now to promote something like that. I mean, you would want time to really promote it. But you do a show or two like that, and you see how it does, you know, tickets-wise and just overall, you know, reaction-wise, how they do. As an experiment, I think it would have made sense to at least try something like that, absolutely.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT this week opened with a Johnny Gargano, Candice LeRae in-ring promo. This was great babyface stuff from Johnny Gargano. Is there any better babyface right now in WWE? Even better than Daniel Bryan. Is there any better babyface than Johnny Gargano? The guy is just on an incredible roll right now. He's had two amazing back-to-back TakeOver main events to the point where I don't see how you don't headline the next TakeOver show with Johnny Gargano. After two main events like the ones he just had, how do you not headline probably the rest of the year with Johnny Gargano in main events on those TakeOver shows? But anyway, they came out and you know, Johnny was back. It was his first time back in Full Sail, back reinstated after his big win over Tommaso Ciampa. And the first thing he did was he was back to issue a challenge to Aleister Black for his newly won NXT Championship. Candice even took the mic at one point, and she was talking about her match later on in the show with Zelina Vega, which was the scheduled main event. Shockingly, nobody came out to beat them down, to attack Johnny. I was half expecting Ciampa to come out and give Candice a pile driver. I think it was Triple H, actually. He did an interview within the last week. I don't know if it was with ESPN or who it was with. But he was talking about the decision to put the Gargano-Ciampa match on last at TakeOver New Orleans. And he said, you know, you always struggle with these decisions. That, you know, he believes that typically it should always be the title that goes on last. But it's title versus personal issue. And he said, ultimately, personal issue won out. And, you know, he was talking about the future for Ciampa. You know, will there be more stuff with Ciampa and Gargano? And he sort of teased it by saying, we haven't even seen the most sinister side yet of Tommaso Ciampa, what this guy is capable of. But it was funny to hear him talk about the finish to the TakeOver show and just how perfect it was, with the babyface going over and Johnny getting his job back and his wife coming out and celebrating with him. And he even said, he made the comment, he goes, yeah, you know, we could have had Ciampa, you know, sort of give Candace a pile driver or something. But because he's got that old school mindset there, you know, that's the sort of thing you will never see on WWE television as far as like the main shows. And Triple H himself, he kind of teased giving Ronda a pedigree at WrestleMania. Obviously, he didn't follow through on it. But I wonder in NXT, if they really truly look at NXT as a separate beast and Triple H sort of, you know, obviously it's his baby. He can do whatever he wants. If we might see, because I think they should totally do it. I said this last week. I think that if you want to keep the Gargano Ciampa thing going and do one more match, because Ciampa's got to be stewing after that loss. And now that Gargano is back on the same brand, I don't see Ciampa letting this go so quickly. I would think there will be a rematch at some point. And what better way to build heat and intrigue going into that match than for him to physically do something really sinister to Candace in the ring? You know, like giving her a pile driver. Now, maybe it wouldn't be a pile driver since that's a bad move. But him going after Johnny's wife, you know, tying her up in the ring and threatening to do something before, you know, before he runs out, I think is something that we're probably going to see at some point, and I think we should. Ricochet made his Full Sail debut against Fabian Aichner. They had a pretty good match, and this was a more of a showcase for Ricochet than anything else. They built him up here as the one and only. That's part of his theme song when he comes out. They're calling him the one and only Ricochet, which is true. There is only one Ricochet. He won with the 630. He's going to be a big... I mean, the guy's got superstar written all over him. He's had superstar written all over him for years. No matter where he's been, Lucha Underground with a mask on is Prince Puma. The guy had superstar written all over him, so he's going to go far. EC3, we got a video package for him that was very well done. His thing is he's in the top 1%. So just, you know, I got to give credit to Triple H on this here, because they really just took the EC3 gimmick from TNA and they just, you know, dumped it right in NXT. They really didn't make any changes to it at all. They haven't called him Ethan Carter. You all know my solution to that. You just call him Ethan Cartwright III, or what was the other name I came up? Oh, Cambridge. That was the other one. Ethan Cambridge. It's very easy. If you ever have to explain what the initials mean, you just go with Carter. You go with Cambridge or Cartwright or something. But I like how they tell you he comes from a rich family. They just don't tell you what family he comes from. I would pop big time if they ever do a segment where he visits his rich Aunt Dixie. And they actually use Dixie Carter in the segment, even if it's just like a one-time thing. Vince McMahon would never do it, but Triple H, I think, would. The War Raiders, better known as War Machine, Hanson and Rowe, they made their Full Sail debut here, beating two Deuce and Domino knockoffs, whose names I didn't get, but they beat them in short order. They won with the Fallout. And so the War Raiders, who else we have in the tag team division in NXT? I guess Sabatelli and Moss for now are still together. We've got Heavy Machinery. We've got the War Raiders. We've got the Undisputed Era. Pete Dunne and Roddy were a team. Now they're not. I'm trying to think of what other team. Now that AOP is out, I'm trying to think of what other teams I'm missing here. I feel like I'm missing another obvious team. Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch, I don't know if you would really consider them a permanent tag team. So I still feel like they need a couple of solid teams in NXT. But War Raiders certainly is I think, going to be a nice boost for the division there. Speaking of the tag team titles, it appears that Roderick Strong, is now officially, you know, he is recognized as one half of the NXT tag team champions, even though it's technically Adam Cole. Well, let me back up a little bit here. Technically, it was Bobby Fish. He got hurt, so they slid Adam Cole into the role, and they got the win at TakeOver, but it looks like he has essentially gifted the championship to Roderick Strong. Either that, or Regal decided that you can't defend two titles at once, and so the only solution was to put the belt in Roddy's hands. They didn't really explain that, but they did a backstage segment, they were doing a photo shoot, and Roddy had the belt. And Adam Cole obviously has his own title. He's got the North American title, which he's defending next week against Oney Lorcan. So I guess they are the officially recognized tag team champions now going forward. We got another video package. We had a few of them on this show. This one was for Kona Reeves, who is somebody who I've gone on a limb in the past. I've gone on record last year, I think it was, and made the statement that there was something about this guy that made me think one day he'd be a big star. And I'm going to stick to that, although watching this video package here, I think that there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. But they have repackaged him. This time they've repackaged him as a Hawaiian John Morrison here. He's got the long hair. His gimmick is that he is the finest. He has the finest smile. He has the finest jewelry. The finest hair. So he re-debuts in 2 weeks. I don't know if this is going to be a success or if this is going to flop. But it's something different. He's got the Playboy thing that he's doing, and we'll see if he can deliver in the ring. At the end of the day, that's the most important thing. You want to get the fans in Full Sail behind you, you got to be able to deliver in the ring, because otherwise they're going to eat you alive. Lars Sullivan beat Killian Dane in a no-disqualification match. These two beat the hell out of each other. In fact, Killian Dane had his nose busted open pretty good. He was bleeding all over the place. He also teased Killian Dane. Now, Killian Dane's a big dude, every bit of 350. Okay, or somewhere between 350 and 400, okay? And he teased doing a Van Terminator. He teased doing the coast-to-coast from one end of the ring to the other. And we did not get to see it, unfortunately. Lars Sullivan recovered in time to avoid that. But he gave Killian the freak accident on top of two chairs and pinned him. And Killian Dane got beaten so badly, he ran to SmackDown, where he is about to make his debut. As did Zelina Vega, who lost to Candice LeRae in the main event. This was all about people doing the honors on their way out. They were in the main event. Andrade Cien Almas came out within the first 30 seconds of the match. Almas came out, couldn't help himself. So that brought out Johnny Gargano to even the odds, and so the two of them stayed out there for the remainder of the match. Candice locked on the Gargano escape. Andrade ran in, and Gargano cut him off, put Almas in the Gargano escape. So we had stereo submissions going on here. Both of them tapped out. Candice gets the win. And then after the match, Gargano got back on the microphone and made the official challenge to Aleister Black for his NXT Championship. That brought out Aleister Black, who accepted. And so next week, that being this Wednesday, we are going to have ourselves an NXT Championship match. Two championship matches, in fact. We're going to have Johnny Gargano challenging Aleister Black. And we are going, and maybe that'll be where Ciampa rears his head. And we're also going to have Adam Cole, as I mentioned, defending the North American title in Full Sail for the first time against Oney Lorcan. From different reports on Aleister Black, it looks like he's now wrestling in long pants. And so this follows Okada in New Japan. He also, a few months ago, debuted the new pants look as opposed to tights. Perhaps one day we may actually see Randy Orton wrestling in pants. Maybe there's a trend going on here. Maybe Orton gets on board with this trend. I'm not convinced he even wears them, let alone wrestles in them. So that is that's your NXT rundown. Good show this week that sets things up going forward. That Gargano Aleister Black match should be a hell of a match. You know, Gargano, I think, may be the only person to hand Aleister Black a pinfall loss in WWE. He certainly was the first. It was in that fatal four-way they had in the build-up to Johnny being named number one contender to Andrade in January. So you have that little bit of history there between them. I still think that Tommaso will get involved in some way and spoil things. Before we get to the mailbag, I am adapting said tweet this week to Foolish Facebook Post of the Week, and I am awarding the honor to Super Schmuck Billy Graham, who on his Facebook page this week went off like a bomb on Ronda Rousey, or Ronda Lousy, as he calls her. Very creative, very clever. He apparently takes issue with Ronda using Rowdy Roddy Piper's name and his gimmick. He called it a total insult. I'll read some of this here for you. It's a total insult, and it absolutely reveals that she does not have an original thought in her head. This shows you how shallow she is. And by the way, I am a fan of females being in the main event. That is why I put up this photo of Amanda Nunes kicking her ass in 48 seconds. She looked pitiful. A TKO in 48 seconds on December 30th, 2016, by Nunes, a real fighter, and Rousey, just a jobber. Speaking of jobbers, I read today a quote by Meltzer that shook me to the core. There was a rumor going around by WWE officials prior to WrestleMania 34 that Rousey was going to make Triple H tap out to her armbar finisher instead of Stephanie McMahon. What? Miss Lousey was going to make Triple H tap out? This would have been as well received as a cement truck full of pig shit being dumped on the WrestleMania fans. God, folks, what is WWE thinking? Ronda Rousey is not a god of some kind, but a mere female UFC failure that got her flat ass kicked twice on the way out. Now this is nauseating. I demand that you fans respond to this crap that WWE is trying to lay on you by even thinking about her making Triple H tap out. God, this makes me sick. To help you get over your urge to vomit over this news, please click on the link below. It is a 60-second promo by me from Florida, and please tell me if anyone in WWE today can match my short promo. Unscripted and loaded. So all that, just as an excuse to put himself over at the end. I apologize for wasting all of your time here. This guy has no idea what he's talking about. First of all, Ronda Rousey called Roddy Piper on the phone personally before she even had her first amateur MMA fight. She called him and she asked for permission to use the Rowdy name because she was a huge fan of his. He was an inspiration to her. She asked his permission. Roddy gave his blessing. Roddy's own son, his son Colt, flew to the Royal Rumble this year with his father's jacket to give to Ronda Rousey, who wore it out for her debut. That's why the jacket looked like it was five sizes too big. It looked like she was wearing her father's coat because it wasn't hers. It actually legitimately was Roddy Piper's leather jacket that he used to wear. And his son brought it to the Rumble to give to Ronda. Now, to be fair, he did not know why he was bringing the jacket when he did. What happened was he was called by WWE, and WWE said to him, look, can you bring the jacket with you to the Rumble? He knew it had something to do with Rousey. He thought maybe it was a photo shoot or something, but they didn't tell him why he was bringing the jacket because they were keeping the Ronda thing so secretive. They didn't want news to leak that she was going to be there. That's why Ronda, and I never bought into it, but leading up to it, she was like, oh, I'm in Colombia. I'm filming for a movie. I'm not going to be there. And then she was. So Roddy's son didn't know what the jacket was going to be used for when he got there. But when he found out, he was okay with it. And he lent it to her. And he thought it was this great honor that Ronda was going to wear her, you know, his father's jacket out for her debut. So the point is that Roddy and the family are fully behind her. She, you know, got permission for it, and she was a big fan of Piper's work, as he was of hers. And so, you know, the other stuff, he's entitled to his opinion. But that old man yells at cloud meme was made specifically for Billy Graham. This is the same guy who once wished death on Chris Jericho and hoped that his death would come soon, and that he wished that he could use a pair of pliers to cut his tongue in half and watch him bleed to death on his own blood. That's his exact words. Bleed to death on his own blood. That's like Owen Hart kicking Brett's leg out of his leg. It's been a while since we've had a good super schmuck story. I used to talk about him a lot. I mean, look, you can't deny the influence that this guy has had on a lot of big names in the wrestling business. Billy Graham was a big draw back in the day. Probably didn't have nearly enough time on top as the champion. And his influence on people like Hulk Hogan and even Dusty Rhodes and other people, and the way he did his promos and everything, he was ahead of his time. Absolutely. Deserves all the credit in the world for that. He was a big name. But the guy is about 15 fries short of a Happy Meal. Mailbag time. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Kyle from Santa Barbara, California. Saw a lot of people complaining about The Undertaker squashing John Cena at WrestleMania 34. To me, it seems like it was planted to set up next year. Or planned, I guess he said. Doesn't it just seem like they'll reverse the roles? Taker pursues Cena this time because he knows the 16-time world champion can do better. Cena declines. Taker persists to no avail until finally putting his career on the line at WrestleMania 35, to which John Cena accepts. This gives Undertaker some time to get better prepared for one final match. How much time does this guy need to prepare for one match? He wrestles once. Maybe twice. I guess he's going to wrestle at this greatest Royal Rumble. He wrestles twice at most in a year. The course of a year. He wrestles twice at most. If a year is not enough to prepare for one match, then guess what? It's time to hang up the trench coat. So let me just say that first, okay? He's got more than enough time to prepare. That's number one. Number two, I don't know why would Undertaker pursue a match with Cena. He beat Cena. There's no reason for Undertaker to want to go after John Cena. There's literally no reason for him to go after John Cena. John Cena called him out. John Cena said all these horrible, nasty things about him. You know, and embarrassed him every single week. Undertaker came out, kicked his ass, pinned him, and went home. There's literally no other reason for him to want to go after John Cena. So I don't see what's gained by that. I'm not saying that they won't come back and do the match again. I just don't see that as being the build-up, where they just reverse roles with Undertaker coming out and issuing a challenge to Cena. Because to me, there's no reason whatsoever for him to do that. And, you know, if Undertaker does have a rematch with Cena at WrestleMania next year, I don't see the outcome being the same, which means he loses. And so if that turns out to be his final match, he goes out a loser, which he would have anyway if he would have left things alone after the Roman Reigns match last year. But one of the things I heard from people was, oh man, you know, don't be so hard on the match. You know, I'd like to see Undertaker come back and, and maybe go out with a win this time. Well, if he comes back and wrestles Cena again, I guarantee you he's not going out with a win. So if it were me, I would leave well enough alone. Avin A. in Bombay, India. I was watching the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony, and during Mark Henry's speech, he mentioned that he threatened Shawn Michaels and was banished to Canada. Can you elaborate on this? Does this have anything to do with Montreal or Mark Henry liking Bret Hart? No, it had nothing to do with Montreal because it happened the year before Montreal. Actually, it was only a few months after Henry got started with the company. So this is kind of a funny story, actually. He broke his ankle. This was in, I want to say, late 96. He broke his ankle, and so he was walking around for a while on crutches. And because he was the new guy, you had all the other guys in the back were ribbing him and razzing him, and they would hide his crutches so he couldn't find them, or one crutch. So he did what anybody would do in that situation, because he didn't know any better. He was new to the wrestling business, and he's a big, scary man. And he told them all that when his ankle was healed, they would be dealt with. If Mark Henry tells me that I'm going to be dealt with, I'm logging on to LegalZoom and getting my will and testament taken care of to make things easier for my family. So one of those times, when they hit his crutches, Shawn Michaels was there. And he was giving Mark Henry a lot of crap about it and laughing about it. And actually, he was standing, as Henry tells the story, Shawn was standing behind Psycho Sid while he was giving Henry crap. So it was almost like he was hiding in a way behind Sid. And there's this great quote from Mark Henry. I had to look it up because I couldn't remember exactly word for word what it was that he said, and I wanted to make sure I got it right. So Shawn is taunting him, and Henry just goes, "Man, you think this motherfucker standing in front of you is going to protect you from me? I'll rip you off the bone, then put my foot in your ass." I love that line. That line is, if they had let Mark Henry say that line on television back then, he would have been world champion a decade earlier than he was. "I'll rip you off the bone and put my foot in your ass." How great is that? So naturally, Shawn Michaels did what, by all accounts, Shawn Michaels did back then. He ran to Vince McMahon and cried like a bitch. He cried that Henry threatened him, which led to Vince having a meeting with Mark Henry, where he told him that he was sending him up to Calgary. He was sending him up to Stampede Wrestling, I guess to get some more training or seasoning. Really, I guess Henry saw it as a punishment. He was effectively being banished to another country. He was being banished to Canada. So that's where that stuff comes from. But that's also how Mark Henry ended up getting so close to Bret Hart and the entire Hart family, because he went up to work basically for the Hart family. He worked in Stampede. He got to know the family. He got to know all those guys. They helped break him in a way into the business. And that's how he got very close and became a Bret Hart guy over, you know, being a Shawn Michaels guy. Beth from Nashville. I was doing some research on the Bret Hart DVD set they released in 2005 and discovered that it was originally supposed to be called Screwed, the Bret Hart story. It was originally going to be in the same format as the Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior DVD, until the project was scrapped for reasons that I cannot figure out. Do you know anything about this and why the plans were changed? Well, I mean, the plans were changed because Bret Hart got wind of this project that they were working on. It was a hit campaign. I mean, that's really what it was. It was a total hit job on him, and he did not want his legacy. Bret has always been very big about his legacy. He claims that the only reason he came back to do the Hall of Fame in 2006 was because it was very important to his legacy, to not have WWE tarnish his image and sort of, you know, come up with their own narrative about him and his career. He wanted to come back and, you know, give his own speech and end things on a better note. That was very important to him. And in this case, he got wind of what they were planning to do, and he agreed to do the project so that he would have a hand in it, and he could be part of it, and it could be a lot more favorable to him. And so it changed the entire tone of the DVD. The only reason it didn't happen was because they did a different Bret Hart DVD that had him involved in it. That was that DVD set that came out, I don't remember what year, maybe it was 06. It was this three-disc DVD set where Bret would talk about some of his biggest matches, and they showed some of his biggest matches, and it was like just 9 hours long of just all this great Bret Hart content. And so that's the only reason why the Screwed DVD never came out, was because Bret, you know, he agreed to be part of it. And once that happened, you weren't gonna do a DVD about Bret Hart called Screwed if Bret Hart was going to be involved with it. It was going to be, you know, a lot more positive in tone. And they didn't have to do the hit job anymore. Emmerich in Cardiff, Wales. Will we ever see AJ Lee return to WWE? She has engaged with WWE female performers on social media frequently. Her book released last year mainly focuses on WWE, and I suppose the whole WWE versus CM Punk beef has blown over. I don't know where you got that from, but I can tell you most assuredly that the CM Punk WWE beef has not blown over. In fact, there's still lawsuits outstanding that is draining Punk of a lot of money, I'm sure, every single month. And even poor Colt Cabana has been dragged into that whole mess. So things are not well at all between Punk and WWE. I don't know where you got that from, but that is not true. I will say this, though. I do believe at some point in the next few years that AJ Lee will be back in WWE. I believe AJ loves wrestling. I think she's still a big wrestling fan, probably still follows it. It's got to be killing her that she can't be involved with this whole women's revolution stuff. And now Ronda Rousey is in, and all, you know, all the matches and stuff that Charlotte and Sasha Banks and Bayley are having. I don't know her personally, but just knowing the kind of crazy wrestling fan she always was and how big a name she became in that company, for her to leave at the same time that all of this was just starting to happen, and she deserves a lot, you know, she definitely had a hand in that, absolutely. I mean, you know, AJ at one point was one of the biggest stars on Monday Night Raw. I don't mean just women's stars, I mean stars, period. She probably had more main event segments than most of the big male names on that show. They would go off the air a lot of weeks with her. She became GM at one point. She's a big star on that show. And for her not to be involved with all of the women's stuff that's going on now, and they had the first women's, you know, Royal Rumble and first women's Elimination Chamber, you got to think on some level that it's killing her that she can't be part of that. So I do believe that the Punk WWE stuff is going to settle at some point down the road. I'm not saying Punk is going to come back, but I think AJ Lee will be back at some point because I think she still loves it. But it would be kind of weird for her to come back now when you still have all these lawsuits and bad blood pending between her husband and the company. She's sort of caught, I think, between a rock and a hard place. I hope she's happy. I think she may have started her own business. I'm not sure what she's doing right now. She had the book come out last year, so whatever she's doing, I hope she's happy and she feels fulfilled, but I think on some level she would just love to come back and be part of all this, and she's got to feel like she's kind of missing out, which is a shame because she was a big player there for a while. Iyad from Lebanon. You often talk about how certain wrestlers like Stone Cold Steve Austin had the BMF walk. Did you see it this past Raw with Ronda Rousey coming down to save Natalya? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's only two people, I would say, in WWE right now who have the BMF walk. Ronda is one, and Samoa Joe is the other. I can't really think of anybody else right now who has that kind of swagger to them when they come out to the ring. Austin had it. He sort of perfected it. Ronda's got that face when she comes out, you know, when she's not smiling. And Joe has it, absolutely. Joe comes out like a total badass when he walks out. So I would say those are the only two people I could think of on the active roster right now who have that. Eric from Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. Buy or sell on the better Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect match? SummerSlam 1991 or King of the Ring 1993? I'm going to buy on King of the Ring 93. I know I've talked about this before, but I'm buying on King of the Ring 93. Both great matches. I would say the finish to the SummerSlam match is better. But even though Perfect tapped out, you know, way too quickly, or he didn't tap out, he gave up. Back then we had verbal submissions. I sound like an old man now. Back in my day, we had verbal submissions to these moves. There was no such thing as a tap out. That only came about thanks to Ken Shamrock in 97. But the better finish was the SummerSlam match, but as a match itself, I really like that King of the Ring 93 match. I like that match even more. That whole King of the Ring 93 pay-per-view is one of my favorite pay-per-views. Omar from the United Arab Emirates. I was watching WrestleMania 21, and it got me thinking. Since I was a five-year-old back then, what was the fans' anticipation like of the Batista versus Triple H main event? Were they excited for the match or afraid that Triple H's reign of terror would continue? Well, I mean, you know, I'm sure from a kayfabe point of view, they were worried that his reign of terror might continue, right? That's him doing his job. You know, it's a weird thing when it comes to Triple H back then, because I've talked about the dark days of Raw, right? And the reign of terror, and I did not like the reign of terror. Now, on some level, I have to sit here and admit that Triple H was a great heel. And if you have a great heel, you want to see them beat. So he was doing his job. What I didn't like about the whole Reign of Terror thing was it just made for boring television. He was on top in that position for so long, and he beat so many different people who in some cases I think could have gone a lot farther than they did, i.e. RVD, that it was just boring, and it went on for too long. When they got to Batista, the fans woke up and jumped on the bandwagon because there was something about Batista that they just... I don't know, it just connected with them. It was obvious that they were going to build Randy Orton to be in that WrestleMania spot. Orton won the championship, Triple H beat him for it, they dumped him from Evolution, and it seemed like they were on a road to Orton, Triple H at WrestleMania with Orton getting the belt back. But what happened along the way was the fans just started going crazy for Batista. And they did these very subtle things on TV where they would tease certain things, and they would tease that maybe Batista was going to turn on Triple H, but then he wouldn't. There was one segment I remember where they were in the back, and I think Flair and Triple H and Batista were there. And it was something like, I don't know if Batista won a match or won a bet, but he said something to Hunter about how you owe me you owe me $20 or something. And they all laughed, and then Batista kind of laughed, and he was like, no, like, you owe me $20. And again, I don't remember the whole context of the segment, but it was just such a great... It's little things like that they did until eventually, you know, Batista gave him the thumbs down and he turned on Evolution and, you know, he won the Royal Rumble and then it built to WrestleMania. And to answer your question, yes, the fans were very much into the idea of Batista challenging for the championship. It was not a case like a John Cena back in the day or like a Roman Reigns now, where people feel like, oh, this person was being forced on me. This was a totally organic thing that I don't think the company saw coming. I think it was Orton being groomed for that role, but they went with Batista as the hot hand. Kind of like they ended up doing with Bryan in 2014, although they had to be dragged kicking and screaming to do. I don't care what anybody says. They had to be dragged kicking and screaming, and CM Punk had to walk out in order for Bryan to get the spot he did at WrestleMania that year. But I'm sure it was a lot easier for Vince to look at somebody who physically looked like Batista and said, yeah, I can get behind this guy. No problem. So they made the switch. But it was a totally organic thing. People, you know, they loved Batista, man. They were into him, and they wanted him to be the one to beat Triple H. It was the ideal scenario. It was exactly what they wished for Roman Reigns now, where people wanted to see him go to WrestleMania and win the championship. And they had a pretty damn good match, too. And actually, you know, in terms of like business-wise, WrestleMania 21, I believe that pay-per-view did over 1 million buys. And I don't know offhand what other match or attraction on that show would have, like, single-handedly been responsible for such a big buy rate. I think they were promising a Piper's Pit, I think, with Austin, and they had a big match with Kurt Angle and Shawn Michaels. All due respect to those two, they had a great match. Kurt Angle versus Shawn Michaels wasn't a match that was going to get 1 million people to buy WrestleMania. But I think people were so into the Triple H Batista thing, that match did big business, and that had a lot to do with how well WrestleMania did that year. So yes, to answer your question, people were definitely into the anticipation for a Batista Triple H match. Aaron in Hesperia, California. I always learn every week from you guys. I gotta learn new geography about these places. I didn't even know there was a Hesperia, California. What was your opinion on the historical WWE Desire videos, which included the song The Lonely Road of Faith by Kid Rock, that were first shown on Raw and SmackDown in early 2002? Loved them. Some of the best video packages WWE's ever put together. That Lonely Road of Faith one, running through all the different eras of WWE, it gave me goosebumps. I bet if I go back now, it would still give me goosebumps. It's like watching your entire life of wrestling fandom flashing before your eyes. They show the different eras, the different feuds, then the NWO invasion. This was right before Vince was bringing in the NWO in 2002. And it also gave us a reason to like Creed, which is a hard thing to do, I can assure you. But you can't think of those Desire videos without thinking of My Sacrifice. It just works so well with those videos. And then you have whatever the hell that was on SmackDown this past Tuesday. That music video they did about all the pay-per-views becoming co-branded again. Oh my God. I've heard of ways to clean earwax out of your ears. I was on Google looking for a way to put the wax back in when that thing came on. David from Chicago will end with this. Buy or sell on the better documentary, the Andre the Giant HBO special or the ESPN 30 for 30 on Ric Flair. I thought they were both very well done. The thing about the Flair one that I really love were the illustrations, like the animations that they had. I don't know why. I just thought that was a nice little touch to that. I'm going to go with the Andre documentary. I'm going to buy on that and sell on Flair. I didn't learn a ton of new stuff from either one of those specials, but I feel like I learned a little bit more from the Andre one. And it was just, I don't know, I just felt like it was more well done and just... overall, more informative. And Andre is sort of, I don't know, in a way, he's kind of this mythical figure that he's been built into. And I mean, Flair, I guess, has his own mythology and all the drinking and everything. But I guess that's the one thing they both had in common, right? They were two documentaries about two guys that drank a whole hell of a lot. That's sort of the common denominator between the two of those guys. But if I had to pick one over the other, I'd go with the Andre one. If you got questions, keep sending them in, thesolomonster@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, @solomonster, as we approach 26,000 followers on there. I got to thank you all for that. Don't forget, this podcast is available to download or stream on Spotify. We are now on Spotify. It took a while, but we are on there and bringing in new fans that way, so I say welcome to all of those new listeners. If you like what you hear, you can leave a review for us in iTunes or on Stitcher. We're also on Stitcher Radio. We are a 5-star rated podcast, so you can leave a review there. That would be very kind. I will see you guys back here again for a brand new podcast, 5:45. That'll be next Sunday. Before that, I'll be on YouTube. I will be doing a full review of the Greatest Royal Rumble. I am going to be working that day, so I will not be able to watch the show live. And that's unfortunate because, A, I have to stay off the internet, and B, it's a 5-hour show, which means when I get home from work, I'm going to be very tired. It's going to be like 8 o'clock at night, and I have to watch a 5-hour show. So I'm not thrilled about that. But because it's so freaking long, I probably won't even do a review that night until the next morning. I'll probably just wait. So watch for it on Saturday. That should be going up on the YouTube channel, and then we'll do a brand new show on Sunday. So a lot of new audio coming your way. A new t-shirt coming to the store also on Pro Wrestling Tees. Keep an eye out for that. Until next time, I am the Solid Monster. Be well. Stay safe. Thank you all for your support. I will see you guys back here for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solid Monster sounds off.
They have Kane in the back. This is what he said. Tonight, I will delight as I enter the abyss with a fellow monster. But it is I who will climb out alone and with a smile across my face.
Oh my God.
What do they think this is, Shakespeare? I was driving yesterday, and some asshole double parks his car in the service lane. I should have cut a promo the way the WWE would script one out for me. Why art thou parking like one's smelly orifice? I wish 1,000 deaths upon thee. Then I could do a fucking tope and we could fade to commercial.
Since 2007, The Solid Monster Sounds Off. Available at thesolidmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.